Accession number 23433, reel 8.
Jeff Kirk, reel 8.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I did have a map. I don't know where it is at the moment, but it was Tom Carroll's map, and he marked on there our route that we were going on, and right where he put the last mark with China Graph is the spot at which he was killed.
His pistol.
Oh, yes. I had lost my pistol. Now, so when Carol got killed, I unbuckled his and put it on. And remember, 840481 is the number of it. New York State Police, it was stamped. A Smith & Wesson. And I always remember... Quartermaster Sergeant came up to me, the only favourite out of them, he said, "By the way, I haven't got the number of your pistol." So I said, 840481, and he said, "Oh, I'll put that on your sheet." So I was saved a court martial, whatever they do to you if you lose your pistol.
And you had a trip to the War Graves Cemetery.
Yeah.
Would you like to talk about that?
I've been to practically everyone like.
But was it Albert Lewis's?
Oh, that one there. That's in the Reichswald Forest. That's the biggest war grave cemetery in Germany. There's 7,000 graves in there. And that's the reason I went there, was because I was going on this trip to, it was called A Bridge Too Far. There, and Mother said, "Oh, I don't know what I want to go." And then I suddenly saw they're going to the cemetery in Reichswald Forest. So I said to Molly, "I'm going, because that's where Tom Carroll was buried." So I looked up my records, and I knew that Tugruff and Albert Lewis were buried there. So we went there. Now, I buried a cat badge at the bottom of the gravestones, because you have to bury them deep, otherwise they dig them up and throw them away. And so I buried a cat badge. But when I got to Albert Lewis, instead of having the Buff's cat badge on the headstone, it had got the Iron Mail Fist of the Royal Armour Corps. So when I came home, I carried out an investigation, and Margaret Barry sent me down a complete list of the whole of the regiment thing, of where they, who they are. Now, she said to me, I could only find one Albert Lewis, and there was only one Albert Lewis killed on the 8th of March, 45. I said, 518895? She said, "Yes." I said, "That's him." "Oh, no," he said, "he's in the 152. So then I carried out the research, and I found out the 152 never even left England. The nearest they got to the continent was Newmarket. It was used as a sort of holding regiment for the wounded and made up the crews and sent out again. So I got this, and then I got onto phoned around. Now, Lieutenant Peacock was in the burial party, I think, and he said, "I always remember it," he said, "because Troop Ruff was an atheist." Now, in the army, there was no such thing as an atheist. If you didn't have a religion, you were C of E. Eh? And he said the party was going to bury it, Reverend Preston, he wasn't there, like, and another different party, and he had to go away and find out permission if he could bury an atheist. And he came back and said, "Yes, I can." So I know he was there. Charlie Brooks was on the burial party. George Snashtall was sitting alongside of him because he was driving a tank when he got killed. So, you know, and the 152 were never out there. So, to me, as far as I'm concerned, that was it. I correlated all this information together, and I sent it to the War Graves Commission at Maidenhead, that's right. And I thought, well, I won't hear for a month. And I did have a letter back saying that, yes, you know, with all the information I'd given them, that it was true, eh? And they've got all to their records to amend their records. Well, I went up to Duxford And after the show was over, the War Graves Commission had a stand there. And I went to the War Graves Commission, I said, oh, troop graph, and blah, 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 on the typewriter, and computer, and out comes a sheet. Yes, troop graph. I said, Albert Lewis, 518895. Yeah, but 152. I said, never. I said, in the 141. I said, oh, no. I said, he was in the 141. I said, at home I've got a letter. I think it's Judith Edwards, her name. The recording officer there said, you're going to mend the record, see? And I wrote all this on the bottom of it. Well, I left it a month, and I phoned up the War Graves Commission, and, troop half, yeah, blah, 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 grave number, so and so, yeah. Troop Albert Lewis, oh, yeah. I said, what regiment was he in? The 152. I said, he wasn't. I said, 141. I said, of course, I have the letter in front of me now. And I said, I've got the letter here, standing there. And I heard the old click, computer, click, 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 click. Oh, that's right, in 141. I said, yes, thank you. And 2 days later, they sent me the proof. I then wrote to Grossenbeck Museum, and the curator there wrote back and said, they can amend, personally see the records were amended. So as far as we're concerned, he's a thing. You see, all these things are found are true in their instance that they're written on the information available at the time. But how on earth they got mixed up with Albert Lewis with 152, and that, I just don't know. I mean, when you consider they weren't even, didn't even leave England. And I was lucky as well, because going through the war diaries, while it's an offence to mention a man's name, you know, if an officer gets killed, he's mentioned name, rank and number. But if a man gets killed, it's just one other rank killed. I learnt this, I was going through, I think it was the 5 and 4 files records, and it had got lieutenant number so-and-so, lieutenant wounded, sergeant so-and-so killed, trooper so-and-so killed, and there was a neat line drawn through each name, 6 other ranks killed. Okay? But when I went to the Albert Lewis one, written in the text of the battle, it said, in attempting to recover the tank, Lance Corporal Lewis and Trooper Up were killed. So I sent this up to the War Graves, because they had, they couldn't really refute it, like they had so much information there. Oh, I had to get there, had to get his death certificate as well. Cost me £11. Get that.
What did it have on the death certificate?
Died of wounds. No regiment, just says Europe.
Did you get Tom Carroll's death certificate as well?
No. No, perhaps it might. That's an idea I might get. Because, you see, Tom Carroll was a bit of a mystery. Now, all the grave headstones have their age on. His hadn't.
You've got it down here as 40 years old. Is that what
you... about 40 years old, yeah. He was an old man, of course. So he's when you're 20, an old man.
What can you say about Tom Carroll? What do you know about him?
The only thing I know, he must have been in the Middle East, because he had the 8th Army class. He also had the Italy Star. Okay? Now, I think he must have come home on either LEAP or one of these schemes, like for people who've been out there a long time, like... And then he didn't join our regiment until in November. And I looked that up in, in our war diaries, like, because it tells you, officers join and thing. And that was in November 44. But of course, nowhere does it tell you his age. And I say, most of the, you get one of the war graves things, and it tells you the age, next of kin, everything. And there's nothing there at all.
It's a very poignant little story that you told about him putting the toys in the box.
Oh, yeah, that's when he got on the tank, They were saying he was going on leave the following day.
Did he talk about that at all? Or did he sort of talk to you men about that?
No, because he only joined us that morning, just before we got into action, And he came along, put the toy, jumped in the tank, and off we went, And then he started calling up the guards, Labour one, where are you? He didn't have time to talk about anything, really. You never talked about much, because you see, in a tank, the only way you talk is over the intercom. You can't have a conversation, right?
No.
You've got to use the intercom. Well, if you're using it, the other people can't use it, and the commander's always got to listen to what's coming over there.
Was the intercom linked up to all the tanks in the troop?
What you did, you had a 19 set, right? Now, on a command tank, you had two 19 sets, right? And all the other tanks, they had one 19 set and a 38 set. Now, the 38 set linked up with the infantry, right? But the 19 set, you had all your frequencies and your codes, like. And you had an A and a B on there, right? Where you could switch to A, B or I, C, which is the intercom, see? So your B troop, you'd talk amongst your little troop, like three or four of them in a troop. Your A set goes back to everybody, you know, to rear link and everybody, see? And so, you know, you were always in commotion, but you couldn't chat because you were blocking up the channel for everybody else. And there was too much noise to talk anyway. So, you know, I always remember when I came out, you know, after the war, like, if I sat on a bus, I never said anything. Because I was so used to just sitting, travelling and not saying anything. You know, in fact, I was so sort of, terrified, I suppose would be the word. I would never travel in the front of a bus. We only got a bit of glass between you. I don't like this. It doesn't worry me now, like, but at the time, I wouldn't travel in the front of a bus, like.
Are you still plagued by bad thoughts about that terrible moment?
Not so much now. I don't sleep at all at night, like, you know. I sleep for three-hour periods. I sleep in a chair all right, like, because my missus, you know, they're always saying that all you do is sleep, right? But I can't remember the last time I got in bed, say 11 o'clock, and woke up at 7. I don't know if it's possible to do it, you know.
Do you find yourself going back to it, or is that all over
no,
with
no,
you?
No, I think the mind becomes overactive. You know, I don't, very seldom do I go back to that particular instant. I can shut my eyes and I can see the joints in the brick wall. I can see everything. I can see the leaning telegraph pole. I can see the infantry going like this in the doorway. I can see the lot. I can see the tank in front going up like. But as plain can be. Now, it's Mr. Colville, you know, whose father was second IC of the Lincolns we were going in with. He sent me a map of where we were, but I don't know where we were, like, you know, because he said, he was hit by a German anti-tank gun. He'd been onto the German army. I said, no way with an anti-tank gun. I said, it was definitely a bazooka. I said, and so was the front one, because it hit the barrel on the front one. And this is the other side, about pressure waves. It literally tore the hatches off, the steel hatches off, and blew them periscopes in, like, you know. You know, the pressure, you just can't conceive the pressure wave that come from it. In fact, I did see on one film, it was a German film, they were shooting a bazooka, a Sherman going by, and you literally see the tank, you know, disappear in the shock waves. Yeah. So, you know, it is a thing. Well, I've still got them now, RPG-7s, they call them, that little adjustments now, right, you know. And that'll do exactly the same job. And that's why they put all the explosive arm on the outside of the tanks, isn't it? Mm-hmm. To counteract that. Now, the only thing is, you see, they hang on the outside of tracks about a quarter inch plate, don't they? Well, that will stop a bazooka, because it's purely a pressure weapon. Mm-hmm. Once it's penetrated that, it can dissipate. See? So, but it's not like an 88. Which would go straight through the plate, straight through you, and form a bump the other side trying to get out. Mm. That's with a Sherman, you see. Now, your husband said about the Sherman thing. And that was a good tank. I mean, the British had thousands of them. The majority of tanks we had were Shermans, because the Americans just produced them by the million, didn't they? But you see, you could see a Sherman where it had been hitting the turret, and you could see a bump the other side where the shot had come through and tried to get out the other side. As I say, the Germans used to call them Tommy Cookers, and we used to call them Ronson Lighters. You know, every strike of light, like, you know. Because the unfortunate bit was they had, 1, 2, 3, I think it was four V8 rated engines there, and I think there were so many petrol connections that the sheer shock of being hit, like, it used to hurt them, and of course the engines are red hot, and the lot used to go up in flames. The old church here would have can't even sit down. He's got a seat that sort of slip that comes down. He can only cover his backside, doesn't he? Of course, I mean, you might spend up to 15 or 18 hours a day in when we were in Normandy. Like, you know. Get out when you want to wee, like, you know.
It's 5 o'clock. Yeah. Have you got time to put on the story about your father being away that time? Have you got time to put that on?
What, the bit I put in the...
Yeah, I think you mentioned it at lunchtime.
Oh, my father getting blind.
Yeah, he was, and you went home, and is that the story?
Oh, yeah, my father came, got brought back. My father's firm were evacuated at the start of the war, but they came back in the beginning of 1944. Now, he joined the Hamworth Home Guard. Now, while he was on guard in the August, when the flying bombs were going, he was... In the office, which was a Nissan hut, when the flying bomb landed the other side of the road. So it lifted him up, and he dived under the table, it lifted him up and shook him up so much that he could only keep eggs and brandy down for about 3 weeks. Then he was attending hospital because all nodules were brought up on his spine. And after 6 months, hospital said he was fit to go back to work. He said he wasn't, so he went back to work. He was back for work for 3 days, and he broke down, and they had to bring him home in a taxi. Well, then he had another 6 months off, and their firm said, "You've got to go back." He said, "I'm not going back there to kill myself." So the firm said, "You are finished." Paid him out his superannuation money. Now, he was then short of money, and the only job he could get to do was a lollipop man, which he did. But of course, in those days, he didn't get paid for holiday time, so he was always short of money until he became 65. When he became 65, the shares he'd invested his superannuation, as they played them out, had materialised from 15 shillings, which he paid from, to £3.15, so he had no bother paying the money back, and after that he was well off, or comparatively well off. Now, I went out to the Battle of the Somme with the London Old Comrades Association, who rebuilt the Highwood Cemetery monument. It's not actually in the War Graves Committee, it's outside to the 49th there. Now, and the French say if you don't maintain them, they're going to doze them down because they become dangerous structures. So they went out and rebuilt it. And attempting to rebuild it, they found that what they used for the solid stone wasn't. It was 2 inches of stone filled up with concrete. So they had to bring it all home, which they did, and I made a lovely job. Now, I went out there, Molly and I went out there with them, and they knew everything about the Battle of the Somme. Now, they took us out into the middle of a field. He said, "I must go and ask the farmer, because we've got to walk each other, because there's 6 graves out there with a big cast iron frame with the names on, and apparently the families requested they were remained where they were killed." Well, on the way back, we came down a coach stop, and they said, "Oh, off up these steps," and a flight of wooden steps cut into the outside. When you get there, there's a great big rock, and it's called, "This is the Devonshire Trench, and will always be the Devonshire Trench." And up there, there's 160 men killed that morning out of the one regiment thing. Well, then when we came down again, there was a big cross across the field, right? And they said, "Oh, that's Charles Dickens' grandson, eh?" So I said, "I'll go and have a look and see," and I found it was made to the Princess Louise rifles, which my father was on in the First World War, so I know exactly what he was, at the Battle of the Somme. Then he went from there out to Salonika, and he caught malaria out there, and then he went to Palestine and Egypt. Well, my father, he had malaria every February right up until the only thing he saved for that blowing up the flying bomb was that cured him. He never had it again. Every February he used to go down with malaria. He'd come home at night and say, "My mother, I've got it again." He'd had to go to bed for a week. Like, you know. and what do you call it, recurring malaria, did I, or something like that, yeah. And he got that lot, but he never had it again after all his flying.
Was that quite common to have recurring malaria?
I think it is, yes. Yeah, every February, you know. I mean, some people got malaria and never get it again, don't they? You know, it's just a matter of.
It's like any virus. They say with viruses, stress can bring it on. So I expect it was the stress of thinking about it.
Yeah, but I got after I got wounded and came out of hospital, I got all hematite all around the neckline. Mm. And I went and saw the MO night and. I said, I can't understand it. I said, I'm cleanest ever been. Mm. You know, because I wasn't in the tank then. Like they said, there's nothing to do with that. He said, it's purely nerves. Yeah. And that. But they're going to say something about. Not there, oh, yeah. I was told in the army there's three things you never lose once you've got them: gingivitis, ringworm, and malaria. But they're always in the system. Because the funny thing was, I mean, this is why I say I might have a bit of bone in my back, right? Because I got, we used to call it sweat rash, but it's ringworm, isn't that, eh? And I got it on the back, all over my back. And the doctor said he'd never seen it. I didn't have it under my armpits or around my crotch or anything. On my back. He said, I've never seen it on anybody's back before. So he gave me this thing, and my son used the point. He said, you've got something coming out your back. Mm. So he dug it out. He said, it feels like a stone. I said, it can't be a stone. I said, it might be a bit of bone from Carol's head, like, you know. They were only, you know, not as big as the match head, like, and he picked them out of my back. Well, I had shrapnel coming out of my head for years. The last bit of shrapnel actually came out in 1974. And that came out right alongside the back tooth. They used to come out my head, like, sort of, you comb your hair and you comb a jag, like.
You didn't have a general anaesthetic to have that taken out, did you?
No.
A local anaesthetic?
Nothing.
No.
He said you want the magnet, he said.
Yeah.
It'll grow out, which it did.
But was it very painful, having it?
No. It never bleeds. When it comes out, it's all wrapped up in like cotton wool. I said it's the skin, the epidermis, isn't it? You know, it's all wrapped up like a little bundle.
Like subcutaneous fat or something like that.
Or something, I don't know what it is. But, I've never had a bit of shrapnel, I don't know what I've got any come on. Sometimes I get a little tiny bit. I can't find it now.
But is all the bone gone? Is all the bone gone from your back?
Well, he hadn't found any more. Well, I haven't had ringworm on the back anymore. So, it was only when he was putting it on, he used to say, look, I've got it, I'll dig it out. I said, well, dig it out.
It's an amazing story.
And he said, it looks to me like stone. I said, no, it can't be stone. I said, it might be a bit of bone. That's all I could think it was, you know. Mm. And because, as I say, his head just, there's nothing of it, like, really, just the three neck bends and... His cat badge had holes blasted to it. I think if he lived another day, he'd gone home and leave, wouldn't he? But I know, you've given me an idea though. Now I will send up for his death certificate, because that will tell me his next of kin, shouldn't it?
Yes.
No, it doesn't, does it? No, tell him what
it's different. I know that it's different here to Australia. You get more information, I think, in Australia than you do here.
But it will most likely tell me his age. Mm. Will it only tell? I've got Albert Lewis's, see, because I had to get Albert Lewis's because they wouldn't listen to me until I got his death certificate.
Are you able to look at it before you take it out?
Or you have to.
£11.
Right. They send it to him. Mm. Yeah. Well, I know I got my sister, she had a stroke, like, and then she's gone into a home, like, and we had to clear her house out. And I got this old album, family album, like, not a name in it. But the six of them, I think, are my, well, one was my great grandfather, like. Well, I've got the trace right back to 1824, like, you know. thing. But of course, after that, there was no census, was there? So you've got to go back to the thing. That's how I know my father married my father's father, and two brothers married two sisters, because I've got all the death certificates, see? But that was a thing, because in those days, I mean, the old days at Marvis, I mean, my brother had postcards where, you know, my father would post them in the morning to my mother, meet you at 6 o'clock tonight at Sutton's and all, because they used to be in a choir together, you know, choral society, as they was. And the funny thing was, we go up to, you know, St Margaret's, not St Margaret's, Westminster, you know, where they set all the plots out when the Queen Mum comes, see? And we used to meet an American there, Colonel he was, Colonel Stevens, like, and his wife. See? And he said to Fred Bally and I one day, do you know where the Will Britannia? So Fred and I told him what we knew, like, so. So I said, I'll sort them out for their things. Well, I never did, you know, I'm a procrastinator, I'll do them, I'm done. Well, it was there next year, see? So I said, you were going to send me, I said, I'll find it. So I went home, and there's the old piano store there, went through there, and I'm pulling out old books. Oh, yes, you know, we were seeing this at Isleworth Town Hall, you know, on Saturday, Saturday, this is, you know, this is before the First World War, like, you know, and I found Will Britannia, and that's when I first found out there was only five verses in To God Save the Queen.
Is there?
Yeah. And so I could, he tried all over England to get the music of Will Britannia, couldn't
get it.
Yeah.
You were able to do a copy for it.
Well, he had got this old book, right, and it opened the first page, and there was Will Britannia with God Save the Queen.
I think you're right. I think you do have a guardian angel.
Yeah.
Helping you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's no doubt about that.
Jeff, how many of your crew are left now?
I don't know any of them. I've tried to contact Taffy Wakely, but nobody has known. I'll tell you his address, 49 Carfon Road, Kilbalfour, Cardiff. But they ain't there any longer. And funny thing is, I phoned up all the Wakelins, there are, and there's none. No, one bloke was in the Royal Army Service Corps. Don't bother phoning me again, he said. I'm just trying to find Vivian, his name, Vivian Wakely. I've got a photograph of him out there, right? No. Bob Chaney, I heard, had moved up to Scotland. Johnny Holmes, I never did see, you know, after the war, right? And I say he was an old man, like, he was 30, like, you know. But Alec, my particular mate, Alec Thompson, Titch Thompson, well, he died 2 years ago now. Like, you know. And I told you about the research I did for the MM, did I?
No, you didn't, but there's probably enough space on this tape.
Is it? Right. Yeah.
Are you okay for time? It's not quarter past yet.
Right.
Don't want you to
Yeah,
be
okay,
there.
Right. Now, I produced the regimental address list every year. With about 160 strong. Now, if they've got the MM or the MC, I'll put it after their name. Last Roper meeting, that's the regimental old Playboys meeting, John Bull said, Keith Davenport wants to know why I haven't got MM after his name. Well, nobody knew he got the MM. Nobody in his squadron had done a book, a history of the B squadron, no, it's not in there, nobody, nothing. So I said, oh, I signed out something, I'll have to go along to the public records office. Well, being a procrastinator, I didn't go along to the public records office. The next thing I know, Bob Taylor rings up and he said, Keith just died. See? So I thought, well, I said, I can't go all the way out of Manchester to a funeral because I didn't know what it was. Anyway, Jim Farrington, who lives up there, he sent me a thing in the funeral. John Fisher's doing the obituary night at the service, and it's headed Keith Henry Davenport MM. And I thought, well, I can't put it in the milestone unless it's true. So I went off to public records office. Well, I suppose the most important thing right at the end is I think God has done it under date order. So I got there, you go through one book, right, and then you think when it's ring, and you have to go through it and find the name, right, and I was writing every Davenport down thing. Eventually I came right on the last page, KH Davenport. That's him, see? So then you go to somewhere else and you get another file out, and then it tells you the file to do, and then you go and you get a box which has it, the number that you, what they call them, not e-file, you know, the small little microfiche. And you put that box in where you took the microphone, so they know where it is. See? And I went through it, like, one by one by one.